The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
With me in studio, bearing, unbelievably, a pineapple, is Dermot Gavin. He, a gold medal winner at Chelsea and much more besides. Dermot, good morning. The
morning,
pineapple.
Pat. Yes, a fruit with a fascinating history, a kind of pre-Columbian history in terms of that it was grown in South American places like Brazil. But then Christopher Columbus went over and he brought one back and the world went mad.
He brought one back, and obviously you can chop it open, and it's a sweet, succulent fruit. It's lovely.
Yeah, it is. It didn't start off like that. So it's a member of the bromeliad family. A lot of these plants would attach themselves to trees and collect water in their urn-like foliage. Little frogs would live in them. But this is one that grows in the ground, likes a really nice, humid, warm temperature. Mm. They grow as individual fruits, so each plant will produce one. A lot of people think they grow on trees, but they're a ground fruit. So he goes over in 14, or he comes back in 1493, and he's been on a trip sponsored by Ferdinand and Isabella, and he's bringing back a really, really rough trip. He's bringing back crates of these things.
Obviously they last. They don't go off.
Well, most of them went off. One survived.
Ah.
So he brought back lots of silver. He brought back lots of animals, lots of stuff, lots of furniture, stuff like that. But the thing that really caught the imagination was one perfect pineapple. And that was presented to their majesties and they were enthralled by it.
So, of course, if you bring back a pineapple, why don't we grow them ourselves?
Grow them ourselves? And also, it was unlike anything that had ever been seen. So we had pears and apples and even oranges at that stage, citrus fruits growing. And we know Le Nôtre had the orangeries in Versailles and whatever, a little bit later, but people were used to these fruits. The pineapple was amazing because they couldn't associate anything religious with it. It had no symbolism. It was something completely new. And it was somewhere so what would have been then termed exotic at that stage. Extraordinary. Mm. Right the way around the world.
I mean, when you talk about oranges, I mean, people in Ireland had orangeries. They actually grew oranges successfully.
Yes, they did. They were able to overwinter them, and the oranges with the citrus fruits would stand some of our kind of cooler summers. You'd put them outside and they'd be fine. But pineapples were another thing. And so he goes over, he brings one back, and they become renowned. But who was going to be able to grow them first? So they started, the Portuguese, the Spanish, some other nations who were colonizers started moving them to places like India and the Philippines and started establishing plantations. That was all grand. They were over there. But growing them in this part of the world.
Now, one of the things I learned from the notes you sent me is it takes 2 years to grow a pineapple.
Takes, even up to 3 years. Okay. So it's a long time. So you're coming back to kind of cool, damp Ireland.
And you're going to have the seasons. You're going to have a lovely summer maybe. But then you're into the autumn and the winter and the spring, which is not that great. And this thing has got to survive all of that.
This thing has got to survive. Now, it has another element of history, too, because in the Bahamas, Bahamas was a British colony, and there were all sorts of taxes associated with sugar and the sugar plantation. So kind of delegation came over to Britain to Charles II, who would have been the restoration king after Oliver Cromwell. And they were coming over to petition the Privy Council and the king about money and taxes and everything like that. And they brought I think it was the East India Company, brought all sorts of silver and all sorts of goodies. But they brought a pineapple. They brought the pineapple for the king. And the king was absolutely enchanted by this. Just the look of it, the head looked like a crown. So that's the green foliage on top, looked like a crown. And then this golden fruit with kind of diamond-shaped segments. So he loved receiving it. There's a very famous painting of him receiving it. But then what happens is he uses it as the centrepiece of a banquet. And this banquet was very important because the French ambassador was there, and there was always kind of a bit of aggro between the Brits and the French at that stage. And the fact that King Charles could produce a pineapple kind of showed what Britain, it was a symbol of Britain's
imperial strength.
Exactly. Their wealth, their strength, their scientific endeavours, and the fact that it tasted absolutely brilliant. But how to grow one in this part of the world?
So then the race was on. Who was the best gardener in the country?
And the best, well, the best gardener in Europe, I suppose. And in, indeed, when it came to Britain, the gardener who managed to produce it was of the same nation. The Dutch got there first. So they learned of ways of shaping their greenhouses to make the most of the sunlight that was coming in, but also horse dung that turned out to be the real secret. And then a tanner's bark. So the bark of oak trees that had been used in the tanning, the leather tanning industry, that proved to be invaluable and it was the secret. So what would happen is they would dig 5 foot deep pits and they would fill it with this horse manure and a mixture of this tanner's bark. And the tanner's bark had this remarkable ability to hold heat, to almost ignite like a compost heap, heat, but not to let off steam. So you wanted a perfect balance of heat, a moist atmosphere, not too moist. And the Dutch managed to do it, and they produced for Queen Mary an amazing...
So the idea was you've got a constant temperature generated by the manure and the bark, which and the bit of sunlight, of course, through
the
glass.
In a hothouse.
Yeah, in a hothouse.
So outside it could be frost all over the place, could be absolutely white. And inside you have this constant temperature. So you have the guy, the novice gardener who's sent to look after the pineapples right through the night, right through the winter. Never let the temperature go down. Never let it get too hot because you don't want to burn the fruits either.
Okay.
And then eventually they started producing and in Britain they eventually...
So they copied this technique.
Technique.
A smelly process, I suspect.
Very smelly with that dung. But it's interesting, though, because when we talk about smells, what would have been used to heat greenhouses at that stage were fossil fuels, was coal. But the pineapples wouldn't take the smog induced by that, would kill off the pineapples. So it was only the natural material, the manure, that would actually work on the bark.
Now, this took off to the point that they were able to grow pineapples even in this country as well. But it became the status symbol, and you might have one on the dinner table, but no one would get to eat it.
Yeah, so this was amazing. So eventually, you know, in London, and the King was presented with one that had been grown. First of all, in the Chelsea Physic Garden, then in Hampton Court Gardens. If the King was prating around a pineapple, everybody wanted one. The pineapple, it emerged everywhere. It was a decorative motif. It meant empire. You could put any association with it you want because it was so new. And yes, if you were, let's say, the Gilded Age or Downton Abbey, and you were having the big dinner party, and we know it was all about impressing. So it was impressing about the size of your estate. It was impressing about your scientific abilities, the money that you have, the amount of gardeners that you had, the fact that you'd have a young lad all night tending, and you'd produce one pineapple, and that would be the centrepiece. And you'd open the amazing huge doors into the dining room. There'd be this long table, and the silversmiths in Dublin and London and the crystal makers were mad making these elaborate kind of pedestals to put the pineapple on, and the pineapple stood in the centre of that table, higher than anything else, and people marvelled.
There was a thing called rent-a-pineapple.
You could do that. So you could pretend, you could go to Covent Garden Market, and if you were very popular and invited to lots of these sort of dinner parties up from London to London for the season, you mightn't know it, but you'd be seeing the same pineapple appear day after day. Rather than being sent from their country estate, it was one that had just been rented for the evening at enormous cost. Actually, the cost of producing these pineapples per pineapple was about £80. That was the equivalent of a new carriage and a set of horses. So massive amounts of money. But it became that symbol for Britain. It went around the world. I'm just showing you a picture of a table in Buckingham Palace with the pineapple being that symbol. There's the King being presented the
and
trophy.
Now you've just flicked through a picture there of a massive pineapple folly.
So this is Dunmore House in Scotland, and this is the pineapple folly. Because when you look at it, it's very architectural. It's symmetrical. It's a really beautiful, beautiful shape. So it was all about symbolism and showing off. And therefore, the pineapple became the symbol of wealth and whatever, but also hospitality. So you come down to suburban Dublin in the 1970s and 80s, and you have concrete pineapples being produced to put on top of pillars outside your house, because this was seen as keeping up with the Joneses.
What an extraordinary story. Jeremy, thank you very much for sharing with us the story of the pineapple. Now,
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.